Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Ruiz et al. Titled Circulating Acylcarnitine Profile in Human Heart Failure, a Surrogate of Fatty Acid Metabolic Dysregulation in Mitochondria and Beyond. This article was published online June 23, 2017. Joining me today are guest editor Sumanth Prabhu, authors Christine Desrosiers and Matthew Ruiz, and content expert Heinrich Teichmeier. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. Christine Desrosiers' laboratory and first author Matthew Ruiz tested the hypothesis that patients with heart failure and reduced ejection fraction display systemic perturbations in the level of metabolites related to fatty acid metabolism. Christine, can you briefly summarize what was known prior to your paper in this area and the subsequent rationale to do these studies and the new information that you found?
Thank you, Sumanth. Well, first, I would like to say that our study was first conducted in 2005, so it's more than 10 years ago when we conducted it. And at that time, although there was a lot of studies, mostly in animals, showing that there was metabolic perturbation in heart failure, we were not at the period where we were talking about heart failure metabolome. So there were little known about this metabolome as a whole, and even less about circulating acylcarnitine. Also, one thing you should know is that our study is focusing on heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, because in 2005, there was also not much known about preserved ejection fraction. So then the idea for us at that time to profile circulating acylcarnitine in these patients came from the second author, François Labatte, who is a pediatrician working with patients with inherited metabolic disease, particularly fatty acid oxidation disorder, where profiling of circulating acylcarnitine is a common practice using tandem mass spectrometry for diagnosis of the dysfunctional enzyme. So we had the idea that this could also be useful to learn more about those fatty acid metabolic perturbation in heart failure. Now, 10 years has gone by and like technology have improved and we've been able to seek a second cohort, but also studies have been published. And so in the meantime, there have been a few metabolic profiling studies in heart failure patients, mostly in the past 2 years, highlighting increase in the circulating level of many acylcarnitine in heart failure patients, both with reduced and preserved ejection fraction. So what is novel about our study? In fact, what we are reporting in our heart failure cohort, and we also were able to seek a secondary cohort, which was kindly offered by Peter Crawford, which I thank him for this. We reported even higher circulating level for some additional acylcarnitine species, which has not been the focus of other study, mostly because of technological limitation, which are those dicarboxylic and dihydroxyacylcarnitine, and also very long-chain fatty acylcarnitine, which point out to a dysregulated fatty acid metabolism beyond the mitochondria, in addition, which is and mostly in one organelle, which is the peroxisome. So this finding has been made possible through the development and availability of more powerful mass spectrometry-based method for profiling acylcarnitine and lipid. But what is most interesting about this is that it suggests a novel mechanism contributing to the global lipid perturbation in human heart failure.
Thank you, Christine. It's clear that persistence is the key to publication in this particular study, and I congratulate you and your team on getting this new information to the field. You know, your team found, as you said, the heart failure patients exhibited higher circulating acylcarnitines, but with a complex profile that included several species, including the ones that you mentioned, dicarboxylic, dihydroxy, and very long-chain fatty acids. As importantly, these differences held up after adjustment for clinical and demographic variables in your paper, sex, age, renal function, insulin resistance. I'd like to get Heinrich to comment on why these findings are important both from a metabolic sense and from a clinical sense. Heinrich?
I'd be glad to. As you mentioned, persistence pays off. There's tremendous momentum building up now for metabolism, especially with the advent of new analytical tools and metabolomics and powerful analytical tools as they have been employed here in this study. A wealth of metabolic information and a challenge to analyze the data. We all are aware that long-chain fatty acids are the main energy-providing substrates for the heart and for many other organs in the body. And the perturbances in heart failure of long-chain fatty acid metabolism reflect an inhibition in the beta-oxidation pathway. Even though fatty acid metabolism has had a head start in biochemistry, metabolic biochemistry, we today still have no complete understanding on what regulates the long-chain fatty acid metabolism in the mitochondria. We know more than in the peroxisomes, and the findings here are very important because they include the very long-chain fatty acid carnitine derivatives, which strongly suggest an impairment in peroxisomal fatty acid oxidation. So with this, I think we have a very exciting piece of new evidence of profound alterations in energy substrate metabolism of the whole body in heart failure. And long-chain fatty acids are the main energy-providing substrates for the heart.
Thank you, Heinrich. Christine, as you point out in the paper, the clinical pathophysiologic significance of the energetic status of the failing heart has been controversial as to whether this is truly a energy-starved heart or whether these metabolic changes are compensatory in nature. How do your findings inform this controversy?
Thank you, Suma. In fact, in my opinion, it's not as much a controversy that different interpretation of result obtained with different approaches, which all have strength, limitation, and assumptions. And in a way, what we bring as evidence about for that is that, let's say, the important finding, we have measured metabolite level, which reflect the cytosolic and mitochondrial redox state, which are the ratios of circulating lactate and pyruvate and the ketone body beta-hydroxybutyrate and acetoacetate. And when we measure these ratios, they were unexpectedly not modified. And we expected that if there would be like a big, let's say the mitochondrial electron transport chain was limiting, we would have seen an increase in this ratio, as we see when we sample blood from patient with inherited mitochondrial disease. We have seen this in other studies. So our interpretation then of these ratios, which I must emphasize, reflect the whole body, all the organ at the same time, not only the heart, is that at this time, the activity of the electron transport chain as a whole is not limited nor restricted, in which case we would have seen like a decrease, despite the alteration in the supply and the metabolism of all these energy substrates. But not all studies that have assessed mitochondrial function are having the same result. And this may depend on how they have done these assessments. So the limitation of our measurement is that it is indirect. It is measured in the blood and it reflects all tissue, not only the heart. So it has to be interpreted with these limitations. So I would be curious to hear Henrik's opinion on this.
Thank you, Christine. Heinrich, you've involved in many of these studies yourself. We have your comments as to how this adds to our understanding of mitochondrial and energetic abnormalities in heart failure.
Yes, I'll be glad to comment. We all need to keep in mind metabolism provides the energy for contraction of the heart and the energy for the function of every living cell. And assessing metabolite levels in one way or another reflects the flux rate or the flow of energy. And that is very difficult to assess in the whole body, except through fairly global measurements. And I looked at the literature to see what is known about the acylcarnitines as amphiphiles and potential effects on ion channels, for instance, in the heart muscle. And there are some reports that amphiphiles are actually causing disturbances in potassium channels and are potentially arrhythmogenic. And my question to Christine would be, have you come across this increased incidence of arrhythmias in your study group?
Christine, perhaps you could comment, and also along those same lines, did you see correlations to cardiac structural parameters along with arrhythmias?
That's an excellent point. And in fact, all this link with acylcarnitine, particularly the long-chain acylcarnitine, and maybe even more the very long-chain acylcarnitine, and they are linked to potential arrhythmia, or is of interest to François Labarthe, the second author. And he has been showing that, in fact, acylcarnitine, when applied outside of the cell, they can modify ERG channel. So it is an interest for him, and he's looking in his patient with fatty acid oxidation disorder to try to see whether there could be a link between these two things. In our study, unfortunately, we don't have this information because it was like an observational study and, let's say, mostly exploratory. It was our second objective to look at the acylcarnitine. We were first looking at markers of oxidative stress, and we have published these results first. So we didn't have the result, but we're planning to follow up on this.
That's great. This is an important first step, but obviously a lot more work will be performed. I personally found your observation that the changes in metabolites were primarily observed with acylcarnitines to be very intriguing. You know, heart failure is quite diverse in the abnormalities that it engenders, and you saw very modest changes, if any, in any of the other energy metabolites that you measured. Did this surprise you? And why do you think the changes seem to be predominantly with the acylcarnitines, given that there are fairly profound changes in beta oxidation in heart failure?
So, yeah, this is a good question. Well, admittedly, we were expecting to see some changes in the other energy metabolite. And in fact, we did find some differences, let's say, for some Krebs cycle intermediate ketone bodies, amino acids, between heart failure patient and control. But except for citrate, all these differences were no longer significant after adjusting for covariates, which were sex, insulin resistance from the OMA-IR, which were the two main modifiers. I think based on previous study, these metabolites were modified, and we thought they would be, but maybe they are more modified by some of these factors, which are also present with heart failure. And this contrasts with the acylcarnitine, whose difference between heart failure and control subject persisted even after adjusting for all variables, suggesting that the factor responsible for the difference in the mechanism that are, let's say, underlying the difference in circulating acylcarnitine are independent of these covariables and are more inherent to the heart failure condition. And in this regard, we speculated about the NT-proBNP, since we know that a natriuretic factor can be lipolytic. So this has been one possibility, and this is very strongly associated with heart failure. And we do see a correlation between the two, the acylcarnitine level and the NT-proBNP level.
I think metabolic biomarkers have been more elusive. And I'd like to ask Heinrich what you think of the significance of the metabolic profile that Christine's group described, and whether you think that, one, it could be a biomarker of disease, but also getting into the actual source of these metabolites. It's in the paper, the point is made between mitochondrial and peroxisomal sources. What do you think about that?
I think this is very exciting. And an analogy comes to mind. In the cancer field, there is an increased use of the so-called liquid biopsies. Question is the metabolomic approach focusing on the acylcarnitines, something akin to this, a liquid biopsy? No, it isn't. Of course not. It may have sensitivity that might be comparable or greater than other biomarkers, and it may be a biomarker to assess response to treatment. But here we have a very powerful tool to assess very specifically impaired long-chain fatty acid oxidation at both mitochondrial but especially peroxisomal level, and exploit this pathophysiology as a tool to assess response to treatment. It really, I find it very exciting, a step in the right direction.
Thank you, Heinrich. I'd like to bring in Matthew Ruiz into the discussion, the first author on this paper. Matthew, as we've been discussing here, this was a systemic analysis and a whole body analysis, and this is quite appropriate as heart failure is a systemic disease. Now, in this disease, there are alterations in multiple organ systems beyond the heart. What do you think is the primary source of the circulating acylcarnitines? Do you think it's the failing heart itself? Can I get your thoughts on that?
In my opinion, I think that it's really difficult to answer to this important question. And I think that it's really possible that failing heart might contribute to this profile. But this question should be addressed using appropriate analysis, by, for example, evaluating transmucardial lipids effects. I think also that this profile is probably the resulting of many sources, including skeletal muscle, liver, or perhaps adipose tissue. But in my opinion, if we want to hypothesize the organ implicated in this profile, I think that we can just think that chronic heart failure is associated with increased sympathetic and natriuretic peptide systems that can lead in turn to loss of adipose tissue mass, a cachexic phenotype, and in turn, overload of peripheral free fatty acids. And we know that the latter increase can be handled primarily by liver, that is possibly excited by this overload and can be associated with increased lipogenesis and acylcarnitine export.
Thank you, Matthew. I think looking at the biopsies would be a very interesting next step.
Yes.
And that would really shed light on some of the metabolic abnormalities localized to the heart. Let me move on to the technical aspects of the study. This study was really sophisticated analytic techniques, including starting with simple things like the sample acquisition and processing for metabolomics, the use of MS, both tandem MS and LC-MS-MS, and then the statistical analysis of large data sets. What do you think was the most technically challenging aspects of your study, and how did you meet these challenges during your experiments?
I think there is a lot of technical problems. And the first one, as Christine mentioned, it's a study that began 10 years ago, and at this time, advances in mass spectrometry analysis was not the same than now. In my opinion, the first thing that was difficult, it's when you want to increase the coverage of acylcarnitine spaces, and with the actual method, we can handle around 100 spaces. But for a lot of acylcarnitine spaces, it's difficult to answer the exact chemical property. For example, the better example is when you want to differentiate decarboxylic acylcarnitine and dehydroxylated, because the mass is almost the same, and you have just to develop other approaches. And for this, we use two different approaches using liquid chromatography mass spectrometry with quadruple or with QTOF analysis. For me, the second thing, it's when you want to develop this kind of analysis, to develop this protocol, you use plasma from controls. And in controls subjects, you didn't really expect a lot of accumulation in different spaces. So sometimes when you want to detect a biomarker, the concentration of this one in control patient, it's really near to the limit of quantification. So that is difficult to ensure that the spaces that you want to see, it's really present in the control, and you need to increase the database using other biological samples. And the last thing is the heterogeneity of such kind of samples, because you have to think that age, sex, and other parameters should influence the results in a scalding profile. You have to handle with this difficulty too.
We've had an excellent discussion on the current study. I'd like to get the thoughts of our discussants as to what are the next steps for this work. We've kind of touched upon some of them now, but Christine, what are your plans to take this forward in future studies?
Ideally, the next study would be with a much larger cohort. We would include heart failure patient with the preserved ejection fraction as well and the reduced ejection fraction. But also, we know now that there are a group of heart failure patients with pulmonary hypertension and do have more like another type of heart failure, which are starting to be studied in the literature. And we would also include those. We would include, if possible, at least in sub-cohort sampling of both arterial and venous side for the blood so we could make some differences. It could be like some sub-studies. Also, we need to assess the response to treatment, because if we are thinking about including like the metabolite as biomarker, we need to see whether they respond to treatment. And one additional point, it needs to be related to all these cardiac structural parameter, but also arrhythmia and also fibrillation. So we need to include much more clinical parameters.
Thank you, Christine. Heinrich, perhaps I could ask you one last question as well. In view of the position statement from the AHA on metabolism and measuring metabolism, many cardiac events have a circadian variation. How dynamic do you think is the metabolome, and should we take that into account when doing human studies?
This is an excellent point. I think it must not be overlooked. And the propensity for arrhythmias is well known in the literature, with patients succumbing to myocardial infarction in the early morning hours, but much more so the metabolic consequences of the circadian regulation of metabolism and cardiac function is still incompletely understood and a rich source of new clinical information. I'd like to finish with a thought and a tribute to our friend and colleague, the late Bill Stanley. As I was preparing for our discussion, I read one of his papers in Circulation Research in 2012 on dietary fat and heart failure, moving from lipotoxicity to lipoprotection. What Bill has written there, and I quote two sentences because I like them so much. Relatively low intake of N3 polyunsaturated fatty acids from marine sources alters cardiac membrane phospholipid fatty acid composition, decreases the onset of new heart failure, and slows the progression of established heart failure. And then he goes on to write, the underlying mechanisms are complex, and a more thorough understanding is needed of the effects on metabolic flux in the normal and failing heart, on cardiac phospholipids and lipid metabolites. And I think it could not be said better.
Thank you very much, Heinrich. Matthew Ruiz and Christine de Rozier, I thank you for submitting this work to AJP Heart. Heinrich Tagetmeier, thank you for providing your expert opinion. And I appreciate everyone's time and the really excellent discussion we had of this very nice work. Back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.